everyone, and thanks for joining us for another episode of Lit Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Thea. Today, we'll be speaking with Nicola Siani about his new book, Leader as Healer, a new paradigm for 21st century leadership. Nicola Siani is a transformational coach and leadership development expert. Over the last 20 years, he gained an international reputation for his leadership programs designed for chief executives and top teams from diverse sectors, both public and private. Nicholas also teaches at Oxford University and the IMD Business School. Nicholas's book, Leader as Healer, argues the current leadership methods are outdated and should be upgraded. It outlines both a theoretical and practical map towards a new form of leadership, one that embodies the skill, heart, and wisdom that the current moment demands. So thanks very much, Nicholas, for joining us today for Lit Radio Podcast. So my first question for you is, why did you decide to write this book, Leader as Healer? Why did you think it was vital to upgrade the leadership methods that we currently use?
Well, thank you, Thea, for hosting this podcast. Look, there is one thing that I meet everywhere. I work with senior leaders all over the world, teams, individuals. There is one thing that I meet everywhere and all the time. And it is the fact that we have normalized, particularly in the corporate world, although I think it's more general, we have normalized what I call a very narrow bandwidth, meaning I meet people who are highly intelligent, high intellectual capacity, but in which that capacity is dominating everything. So the emotional part, the embodied self, the intuitive self, the deeper, let's call it mindful meditative self, is very much offline. So people are navigating the world primarily through the intellectual function. Instead of, as Einstein reminded us, the mind needs to be our servant, not our master. And in 99% of people I meet in the corporate world, the mind is the master. And this means that we are navigating more and more complex and challenging scenarios, basically with at least one hand tied behind our back, because we're only using a small part of the full capacities we have. This is no longer enough for business, and it's no longer enough for the wider societal challenges we face.
Absolutely, I agree. And I really like what you say, that the mind should be our servant, not our master, which is a great insight. All right, so in the book, you also mentioned that you identify two models of leadership. The first one is the leader as executor, and the second, the leader as healer. So what's the difference between those two models?
Well, the leader as executor is the one that really we've been prioritizing, you know, for decades now, because this is the leader who is primarily focused on results, is primarily transactional in their relationships. It's all about what you will do. And is very disconnected from real relating, from real emotional connection, and often from any kind of higher purpose. It really is about shareholder return as the highest priority. And, you know, I'm one of many people who are saying business as usual, run by leaders as executors, is no longer an option. It's just not sustainable. It's not what's needed now. So leader as healer has every bit as high a strategic capacity and intellectual capacity as leader as executor. However, leader as healer is deeply embodied. Leader as healer is deeply connected to their emotions, to their sense of purpose, to their intuition, and generates cultures where people show up with much more of themselves. This is a win-win all round, because that means people are going to come to work and enjoy contributing, participating. We know that morale employee is horrendously low worldwide. This is an antidote. People, when they're allowed to show up, when they're appreciated, much more satisfaction at work and perform much better. So leader as healer really is the new paradigm. Leader as healer is correcting this disconnection, correcting this narrow bandwidth, and inviting cultures that perform on a much, much bigger game board, and therefore both generate much better results, experience much more satisfaction, and above all, live with a much higher sense of service and contribution to the wider society.
That's absolutely great. And what qualities and skills does the leader as healer possess?
Well, she or he, I mean, this is the call of the book, that she or he actually has to really do a lot of inner work. And it's been my observation for many years now that people are thrust into senior leadership positions in which they are affecting 10, 20, or even hundreds or thousands of people in some cases, with a horrendous lack of inner development. Everything has been about their intellectual capacity. So leader as healer needs to work on themselves over a long period of time. They need to work to become more embodied. They need to work. A big part of it is they need to attend to all the emotional parts of them that we all shut off during our development and which exist in us as like frozen parts which limit our relational capacity and actually in the end limit our availability for higher streams of insight and intelligence. They need to develop a strong meditative practice, which allows them to rest in a much more spacious, much more attuned interior. These are the main inner capacities that the leader as healer really needs to commit to work with. And in every leadership program I run, people really understand this, and they often go away with a huge and very new commitment to work on, we can call it presence in the deepest meaning of the word. My definition of presence is I'm here and I'm available. But here means I'm here with all of me, not just a part of me. All of me is online here, and I'm available. I'm available to you. I'm available to the world, and I'm available to listen to the higher whispers that come in when I'm really willing and able to practice a kind of deeper receptivity, the opposite of the doing, task-focused modality that most people are in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a very useful insight. And you also mentioned that the leaders here should embrace his or her emotions. So why embracing your emotions is so important? And how does that help you lead better?
Well, because our emotions are a fundamental part of our humanity, and we have so much misconception about emotions and how they're positive or negative and how they just get in the way or they're weak or whatever. This has really got to stop. This is all part of the old paradigm of leadership. We are all, by definition, carrying unattended emotional scars, hurts, wounds. Some of those are personal, some of those are transgenerational. We know a lot about that now. There's a lot of research. If we don't attend to those, basically, we become numb. That's the sad truth. We become numb, which means we're unable to really relate people were unable to show up in a way where people feel, wow, she or he is really listening to me, really receiving me, we're lost in this endless mind trap. We try and think our way out of emotion. We try and fix emotion. Emotion doesn't need fixing. It just needs feeling. I'll give you a very concrete example. It's in my book. This was from an American CEO retreat I ran once, just before COVID. And one of the CEOs, when we were talking about this, had an absolute light bulb moment. He said, wow, I realize, you know, this happened last week. I discovered one of my senior team had done something illegal and I had to call in the police. And we have a big open plan office. They came in, they handcuffed this man, and in front of everyone walked him out. This was Monday morning, and people were in shock. I called everyone together and I said, I'm sorry I had to do that. Let's get on with our work. Well, for the rest of the week, people were like in a daze. Performance went right down. He said, I understand. All I needed to do was bring people together, say to them, look, that was shocking for me as well. I'm so sure many of you are upset at what you saw happen there. Just take a moment to speak to the person next to you about how you're feeling. 2 or 3 minutes. He said, if I'd done that, I would have saved 5 days of below par performance. We just need to acknowledge our emotions. Similarly, in a, let's say, a team meeting, there's a lot of anxiety in the room, and now there is more anxiety than ever. So the mature leader, the leader as healer, at a certain moment during this big strategic conversation, will pause and will just say, look, there's a lot of tension here. There's a lot of anxiety. I'm not sleeping well. This is difficult, what we're doing now. Let's just acknowledge that. And literally and metaphorically, everyone takes a deep breath, relaxes, and guess what? Their conversation continues at a much higher level. So the big irony is that we're obsessed with our critical thinking, but we don't do the things that really help. For instance, body, everyone knows they get their best ideas when they're exercising. We need to bring all of us online. And then our critical thinking faculties, the ones we so highly prize, work much better.
Absolutely. I think the story that you just shared is really interesting and shows how important it is to show the people you lead that you can relate to them and to their feelings.
Exactly, exactly. And if I may, you know, a very senior man on the recent leadership retreat I ran, he wrote a beautiful little poem. It's very short and it goes like this. I've heard the news. I've seen the news. I've thought about the news. I've heard it's sad. I've seen it's sad. I've thought it's sad. I've heard the anger. I've seen the anger. I've thought about the anger. But today, I felt the news. It is sad. I cried. How did I numb my heart?
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely beautiful.
And it's beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, it shows how we really need to embrace our emotions, absolutely.
Exactly. And the thing is, Teo, I want to emphasize in all of this, what we have normalized, we've normalized this culture of disconnection. I call it the culture of absence. We've normalized it so people don't question it until they have a deeper experience of real presence. And there's a wonderful story I tell in my book as well about one of my CEO clients, again, an African-American woman. After a few months of working together, she'd just been to a big leadership conference and she was kind of on fire with something because she said, Nicholas, I saw for the first time, I really saw nobody was listening to anybody. She said, I saw someone speak and I looked and I saw it didn't land in anybody. Now, she, up until then, that was her normal for her. But suddenly she saw it. And that's the beginning of a journey of awakening.
Absolutely. I think most of us need to go through that awakening.
Right. Yes.
All right. So in the book, you also say that we operate from two fundamental modes, being and doing. We already touched a little bit on that, but let's expand a little bit. So what's the difference between being and doing? And why is it important to utilize both of those modes and not only lead using mainly one of them?
Okay. So first of all, these two modalities have been spoken about in every culture for thousands of years. Probably the oldest is we know of is the Chinese, 3,000 plus years, yang and yin. And you see it represented in the famous Tai Chi symbol of the black and the white. The Greeks spoke about mythos and logos. You find this in every culture. I bring it into something very practical by calling it doing and being. So first of all, they have neurological capacity. Doing is much more left brain. Being is much more right brain. Doing is very proactive. The next thing to do, the next task. Being is receptive. Being is realizing, as the great American poet Walt Whitman once said, sometimes the truth depends upon a walk around the lake. It's more receptive. Doing is very rational. Being is more intuitive. Einstein said something wonderful. He said, the rational mind is a faithful servant. The intuitive mind is a sacred gift. And we have created a society which honors the servant and has forgotten the gift. The intuition part of us receives an extraordinary amount of information. In high leadership, high presence, we use both. We don't use only the rational mind. The doing part of us is very analytical. It's an unbelievable capacity. But the being part of us is sensing and empathic. You know, it's like we've forgotten that the thinking mind, our thinking mind, does not feel anything. Our thinking mind does not experience the world. And we've somehow forgotten that. Then we can go a little bit deeper. We can say that the doing part of us is all about form, and the being part is more about space. And this refers to a very simple image in the Jewish mystical tradition, where they say that whenever you open the page of a book, you have the black letters, but you also have a white page. And all creative people, and indeed many scientists, know that the white page is the place where ideas come to me, where sudden insights come to me, and it can feel like downloads. So if we're only obsessed with the black letters, we're missing a huge part of reality. And as I said, yang and yin. Yang is the doing, yin is the being. Now, it's not about, someone once said, and we kind of laughed as soon as he said it. He said, okay, so what percentage of the time should I be doing and what percentage of the time should I be being? It's not like that. High performance, if you can imagine a bowl of being. And from that bowl, there is an arrow of doing. That's high performance, high presence, meaning that we learn through practices to reside in an inner location of being, out of which comes doing, which can be very fast, can be fierce, can be gentle, because it's attuned to what's needed. Most people are lost in a world of doing, cut from being, and their doing is not in touch with what's really going on. So it's not anywhere near the highest possibility. So there is an integration, not an either or. That's one of the core practices of leader as healer.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting, the comparison you just made between the modes of being and doing, and then how we they should work together for us to be good leaders, which I think is really interesting insight. But let's speak about the power of embodiment, which is another thing you mentioned in the book. Why is it so important not to divide the mind from the body, and how can we feel more connected with our bodies in today's world?
Right. I heard an executive say recently, you know, my body is just something that carries my mind around. And that's more or less the normalization of disconnection that we're in. So there are a few key points. First of all, let's remember that when we were children, we were totally embodied. What does that mean? It means every moment is a physical experience. Now, we gradually reduce that, and it's very right that we do so. It's too much, and we're often not really supported emotionally. So we close it down, and it is actually literally like we lift up and we start to live primarily in the location of our head and our thinking. So what do we lose through that? First of all, I think everyone knows, and I often ask people to just remember the last time you felt deeply at home in your body. Really, your body was open, your senses were open, you felt yourself as embodied. Now, that often actually brings a feeling of really being at home, deeply at home. So when we're disembodied, we're in an exile from ourselves. Second, a leader who is embodied transmits, I'm grounded. I'm here and I'm grounded. Leaders who are not embodied, doesn't feel safe. Even if they have great ideas, it's not safe because we need to be grounded. It gives people a feeling of safety and of your deep presence. And most important of all, I would say, is that we've completely forgotten that the body is a source of a huge amount of information about the world. We only have to look at indigenous cultures who didn't develop yet the high intellectual capacity and look at their relationship with the natural world, how extraordinarily deep and precise it is. Their whole connection with the world around through being embodied. That's who we are deep down, Thea. That's who we are, and we've exiled ourselves from that. So, and it's like if you go to a gym, you know, mostly you see people doing stuff to their body, which may be better than doing nothing, but it's not about being embodied. You could also see two dancers side by side, both of whom do incredible movements, but only one is embodied, and it's very clear what the difference is. So in terms of practices, by all means keep doing whatever cardio work people are doing, but stop listening to music. Connect with your body, feel your body. If you're running, feel your breathing. If you're cycling, really get into the feeling of your body. Or even better, do practices like yoga, like Qigong. These are very old practices that are designed to open our connection with the body. Most people know you do a very good yoga class, you come outside into the street, and at least for a few minutes, you are in a different reality. Reality feels different. You feel much more present, much more open. Everything is more vivid. The problem is that for most people that closes very quickly. So we need a really strong commitment and intentional practice to keep these channels open. And the book gives a lot of practices that really, and not just time out. Of course, you can do exercise, it's good. But it's also about how we stay present and open throughout the day. The book has very precise and quite simple practices about that.
Absolutely. I think you just gave really interesting practical advice about going to the gym and exercising, but not listening to music and instead connecting to your mind, which I think is really interesting because I've never really thought about that.
Right.
Yeah. So I will definitely try that out. But when speaking about connecting our minds to the body, meditation and mindfulness can play a huge role in that. And you also say in the book that these are two of the most important and powerful resources of the leader as you are. So why meditation and mindfulness are so important and powerful?
Well, first of all, it's very good to see that mindfulness now is being very widely used. It's being used in hospitals. It's being used in very volatile inner city schools with incredible results. You can just Google and you immediately see. And a lot of organizations are using it now. A lot of teams I work with start their meetings with 2 to 5 minutes silence. The basic practice of mindfulness and meditation is that we pay attention, which is totally different from thinking. It's a noticing, and it starts in a very simple way. We notice our breathing. We notice the sensations of breathing. We notice how they're constantly changing. No two breaths are the same. So it's like we zoom in with our attention to our body. And the very act of doing that shifts our inner location from I as thinker to I am here as a deeper presence, and I can notice my thinking, I can notice my emotions, I can notice my body. And I gradually locate in this bowl of being, which feels much more spacious. It's like I have a kind of stillness inside me. Now, the interesting thing, and I think very important thing now, is that if we're wired up and our brainwave frequency is being measured, and you see the result on a computer screen, when I guide an exercise like this, within 2 or 3 minutes, you feel the room change, but measurably, the brainwave frequency literally changes. It changes from the beta wave range to the alpha wave range, measurably. The alpha wave brainwave frequency is what all sports people are trying to get into, what they call being in the zone, because it's a much higher flow. Our thinking, feeling, physicality become unified, and we respond to the world with a far greater intelligence and accuracy. So on the one hand, a sitting meditation practice is, I believe, essential. And by the way, again, speaking from a CEO who, when I said to him at the beginning of our work, look, you need to develop a meditation practice. And he said, look, I have children, I have 60,000 employees. How do you think I have time to meditate? And I said to him, I promise you, if you meditate every day, you will get much more done during your day, and you will feel much more easy with what you're doing. And we had this conversation. And then after 5 months, he said, Nicholas, you're right. You're absolutely right. So there are multiple reasons to use meditation. The deepest reason, and I think it's often missed because in a way we dumb down a little bit the deeper purpose of meditation, which is it really expands our whole consciousness. It expands us into an awareness of what in science is called, cutting edge physics is called, a unified field. So we literally are perceiving the world in a very different way. So there's the sitting meditation as one thing, but then there are mindfulness practices that I teach that people use throughout the day, and which don't take any time. Even something as simple as before a Zoom call, take a minute, breathe, take your awareness inside, listen to your body, notice your sensations. Before you answer the phone, do the same thing. People report all the time, this is game changing. It changes the whole way I show up.
That's absolutely great. And then the final chapter of Leader as Hero is called The Call. So what's the call for today's leaders?
Well, first of all, let's understand why I use that term, the call. And I give a very, you know, I was a theatre director for 20 years. So I can put it very simply, I think. If an actor used to come to me, let's say, with a Shakespeare text, and she or he would say, "Oh, Nicholas, I don't know what to do with this text." My response was always more or less, stop asking that question. Because the only thing that will be interesting is what will this text do with you? And once an actor would understand that and understand that they needed to be in a much deeper receptivity, stop thinking about what you want to do and let something do you, be authored by something. And then they would start to speak one line, two lines, and this extraordinary emotion would erupt within them. Nothing they could have ever predicted or decided beforehand. So when I speak about the call for leaders, it's really asking leaders to go to another level of listening. And in the chapter on purpose, I invite leaders to ask two questions of themselves. One, what is the work that is mine to do? Not what I should do, could do, but what my deepest essence, what is the work that is mine to do? And then what is it that is being asked of me? Now we enter the territory of the call. What is it that is being asked of me? That means I'm opening myself to a much deeper level of life, not what my ego wants to do. What is it that is being asked of me? That's the call. And in a recent program I ran at the Said Business School, we did deep emotional work on the second day. And by the end of the day, this meant people were in an extraordinary availability. And first they sat in pairs and asked each other, what is it that is being asked of me? And then we went to the whole group. We sat in a big circle, 39 people. We meditated, and I asked the question, what is it that is being asked of us? And people started downloading, meaning receiving these new insights into what is being asked of us. One person at the end said to the program leader, he was head of a major energy company. He said, look at the news in the next few weeks. You'll see what I'm going to be doing, transforming something as a result of this program. So it's listening to a much deeper call, far beyond my ego, far beyond what I want to do for me. What is being asked of me now? That's the call.
That's absolutely fascinating. And I'm sure the book is full of many more interesting insights that are going to help every leader to lead their businesses better. But let's just speak about the situation in the world at the moment, which is quite sad, unfortunately, with the unfolding war in Ukraine. So such times usually show quite well who possesses good leadership skills and who doesn't. And as an expert in leadership, what are your comments on the way the world leaders are reacting to the war, not just the leaders in Russia and Ukraine, but the rest of the world?
Well, first of all, let's acknowledge how serious the situation is. I began a talk the other day by saying the world is shaking. It really is. And I think everyone is feeling it in one way or another. And I do want to honor Zelensky because he is extraordinary. He's showing up. I mean, if wherever we go in the future, books will be written about the kind of leadership capacity that he is demonstrating, the capacities he is demonstrating. For the rest of the world, it's very difficult to comment. I mean, we're just a day after Biden made his speech in Poland, most of which was good, and then it was a disaster at the end when he went off script and basically implied that Putin should be removed, which of course we may all feel, but it's not intelligent to say that publicly. And we saw the response to that. So that's showing, unfortunately, a leader who is not fully in touch and not fully emotionally aware of what is the useful thing to say or not. You can't just react in that way in leadership, much as you may want to. So it's difficult to comment on specific leaders. There's something very positive about how Europe has come together, more or less, for the first time, you know, ever in the way it's happened. Beyond that, I don't see any leader who is outstandingly good in terms of the response. And at the same time, I want to acknowledge that it's profoundly difficult to respond to what is going on at the moment. And we can only all just really, really hope that the worst scenarios don't play themselves out. We're at a very critical time. I do believe that my book speaks to one of the foundational fissures in our society, in our foundational cracks. And the title and the book could hardly be more relevant now, and that we urgently need leaders in every domain who are going to bring us back to wholeness, bring us back to healthy, related, connected functioning. That's my deepest prayer for the book.
I definitely agree that the title and the whole book is really timely at the moment. And thanks for sharing your comments about the situation in Europe at the moment. So my last question to you is, what would be your top three tips for anyone trying to improve their leadership skills?
Find a good mentor who really will guide you on your journey of development. Make sure that you work to develop your embodiment. Make sure you work to develop your emotional capacity. And make sure you have a strong and solid meditative and mindfulness capacity.
Thank you very much, Nicholas, for this insightful discussion. I really enjoyed speaking with you about leadership and about your new book.
Thank you, Teja. I enjoyed it also. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today, and thanks everyone for listening. Don't forget to keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and at Lit Business Media on LinkedIn. For more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.